Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight.
This is the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
So we're recording this Friday early evening, and I just found out a couple hours ago that Jerry Lee Lewis had passed away.
Are we sure he's dead? Because, like, yes. 2 days ago, TMZ reported him as dead, and then they found out, nope, not dead yet.
Right, correct. They jumped the shark on that one. He did die.
They jumped the gun. Jumping the shark would be if, like, they, like, weren't hip anymore.
If they changed kind of how they did their stuff and it made them less popular.
Or if they were over the hill and they were no longer relevant.
Or if they literally got on a pair of water skis and while wearing their leather jacket and jumped a shark.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Wow. Okay. I learned something new every day, even at my age. Yes, he did pass away at age 87.
What do you think about having a fly by the seat of our pants episode today?
Is that like a horse fly, or?
Do you know the origin of that phrase?
I don't know the origin of that phrase, but I just like it when people say, let's fly by the seat of our pants. It means let's just, like, it's kind of the same as being a lazy river, because it's just like, let's not plan anything out. We'll just go wherever we go.
I do like that.
Greg, were you serious that you don't know the origin of Jump the Shark?
You don't know that to be a Happy Days thing, Dad?
No, I don't.
How do I know that? How do I know that?
I don't know that. Like, Happy Days invented that phrase? That was a Fonzie thing or what?
No, it was people who got mad at Happy Days because there was an episode where for some reason, I don't know the whole premise, but the Fonz ended up jumping a shark. He literally was out on water skis in his leather jacket. Hey!
Dad, and everybody says that that's the episode where Happy Days jump the shark.
It stopped being Happy Days, pretty much.
And, like, it turned into something else. So now when a show has kind of, you know, hit that point where people aren't really sure about it, they say this show has jumped the shark.
So that's a bad thing.
Yes. Jumping the gun is when you, like, do something too soon, which is what...
You take off before on your race before the starting pistol is fired.
Okay.
You use jump the shark in place of jump
the
gun.
Yeah, I did. And I'm disappointed because I consider myself a real devotee of colloquialisms. So in layman's terms, jump the shark means what?
Oh my God, we're going to have to explain this again. I just said.
Jumping the shark means you've kind of changed who you are. You've changed, and for the worse. It's always for the worse.
Over the hill. You're done. Like you're not what you once were.
You made a choice that changed the tone and whatever is for your life, for a show, for your writing, whatever it is.
Let me use it in a sentence. We're not sure yet if Greg Cody has jumped the shark.
Okay. So if beginning next week, the Greg Cody Show podcast became entirely about opera, you know, theater and opera, that would be us jumping the shark?
As long as people didn't like it, yes.
What does opera have to do with it, though? This is so weird. Can we move on?
All right. I famously don't know movies. I don't really care about movies, but this is a big thing. Rolling Stone just came out with its all-time 101, not 100, 101 best horror movies of all time. And I'm curious, is that a genre that interests you guys, or where you have like a favorite horror movie? Because it doesn't me, but I am going to give you the top 10 list.
Not me at all. I've never been, I don't know, I just don't like gore. Yeah. I'm not a fan of that. And
including Frank Gore and the football player and Al Gore, the politician, or no?
Yeah, no, it never appealed to me. I like suspense, but not like the horror gore stuff.
This is cool that all three of us could care less about this genre as we try to celebrate Halloween 2022.
Right. We are. I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight.
So what you're about to hear the next 3 or 4 minutes, probably 2 minutes based on how into this segment we all are, we are all about to fake it.
Yes, that's right. Although I will say this. You know what fascinated me about this top 101 list?
Nothing. You just found a list and you clicked on it.
There were a lot of movies from my era in the list. Like, from the 50s and 60s.
Right, because they don't make good ones anymore.
Okay, here were some of the movies that are old movies that I actually watched. The Birds.
I got one for you. The Silence of the Lambs that I just watched. That's got to be on there.
Okay, that did not make the top 10, but it wow. was pretty high on the list. That's also more recent than the ones I'm mentioning. The Birds was number 61. Godzilla.
The Birds. That's not a horror movie.
Yes, it was.
It's a ridiculous movie. I've seen Birds.
Okay. All right. Carrie, of course, with the blood.
Alfred,
okay.
I feel like Alfred Hitchcock movies, most of them are like mockumentaries. Like they're like spoofs okay. on scary movies. Like that Bird movie was ridiculous.
They set the standard for suspense in its time.
No, thank I get you. It. I'm not disrespect. Yes. I'm not saying he wasn't a good filmmaker. I just...
Phantom of the Opera is another one.
Birds in particular, the way that they're like, oh my God, it's like they're running. Like I remember okay, watching Birds as a kid.
The first film class I ever took in college happened to be a study of Hitchcock. So I'm a particular fan of his. And The Birds absolutely was
this
horrible.
1842?
It was, as a matter of fact. Good call.
You literally had interviews with a vampire. I am so perplexed. You took a film course.
Yes.
And you have your history with movies.
Yes, correct. Because Hitchcock, here's a bulletin for you. Hitchcock died like 50 years ago. It's not like I was around when Hitchcock was... Psycho actually was probably the last movie that I saw of Hitchcock's...
Remember when Universal Studios' dad had an Alfred Hitchcock thing and we would always go like do that?
Yes.
Like I just like... That's gone obviously now. I think that's like Shrek now.
It is, right. Yeah, nobody... Hitchcock is nowhere in modern culture anymore. Anyway, I want to read this top 10 list of all-time greatest scary horror movies because, quite frankly, half of them I've never heard of. Number 10, a recent 2018 film called Hereditary. Never heard of it.
This is going to be like, this is just a Mount Gregmore times two.
That's right. Okay. Number 9, from 1974, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Number 8.
That one's good, actually. I like that one.
1978, Dawn of the Dead. Number 7. This is very recent, the Jordan Peele movie Get Out, which obviously didn't see, but apparently pretty good.
I saw it. It's good.
Okay, number 6 from 2007, Inside. Never heard of it. Number 5, 1978, the classic Halloween.
Dad, this list didn't interest you. Like, well, you just found a Halloween list and you're like, you know what, it's Halloween, I'll do this.
I was hoping it would interest one of you. Or that it might interest the listeners, but
we do have some listeners who it will interest. I know a few of them, and they love horror films.
Lester okay. Holt, ding, ding, ding.
Number 4, 1973, Don't Look Now, never heard of it. 1998, The Ring, never heard of it.
You never heard of The Ring?
No, God, no. 1960, this one I've heard of, Psycho.
There you Hitchcock. Go. It's another Hitchcock film.
Yeah.
Right in your wheelhouse. 1960. Right in Greg Cody's wheelhouse.
Damn right. The shower scene. The shower scene. Oh, my God. The shower scene. And the upstairs scene with, is it his mother in the rocking chair? Oh, my God. What a film. Number 1973. Greg Cody did see this in the theater. Little film called The Exorcist.
God, this Thank is you. Like... This has to be of all the Halloween segments being done on podcasts.
Thank
this week,
you.
Like this has to be. There can't be one less in. Like we're just like saying a list of movies.
It's scary how disinterested everyone is.
This is becoming a trend
on
this show.
Move
by
on.
Way.
Let's just move on.
I was working in the lab late one night.
What was number one, Greg? Just give me number one.
I just said that, Yeti.
Exorcist.
Oh yeah, great. I wasn't listening.
Yeah, I know you weren't. You're both fired, by the way. I'm going to start doing this podcast all by myself.
I'm listening, and I'm wishing that I wasn't. That's where I'm at.
Okay. This is becoming a theme of this podcast.
Dad, we're going to start. Dad, we're done letting you just coast, all right? We're not trying. We don't want you to jump the shark, so we are going to call you out when you just are reading an internet list.
I'm a list fan. I love lists.
That should have been something that you're like, hey.
I love Franz Liszt, the German composer. Or was he Austrian? I think he might
Greg,
have been
that was
Austrian.
A good joke. Thank you.
You always good. Save it. You always save it. See, you save okay. it with something like that.
All right. But am I frozen here?
You are frozen. You froze yourself. You just gave up mid-sentence.
Okay. I did.
I think you're just, okay. Your brain is frozen.
I know it is.
You were a guest on a podcast this week.
Which one was that? I forget. It was interesting. Yeah.
Made an appearance with my friends on the Marvel Cinematic University podcast, or the MCU University podcast.
I did. And
they have
how did
a podcast called Marvel Cinematic Universe? Like you can just...
University. Yes. MC University is what
it
is.
Like that, like Marvel's cool with them having that podcast?
No one said anything yet.
Wow. I thought the same thing. It's like there's a Marvel.
They literally make over $1 billion on almost every movie now. I don't think they care.
Could I have a podcast just called Nike?
This is the MC University. So it's teaching people about the MCU. If anything, they should be happy and sign them to some deal or something.
I'm down to make a podcast called Nike.
Okay, Yeti, how do you know these people and why did they invite me on their podcast?
I love how my dad asked that after he did the interview.
I actually enjoyed it, quite frankly. No, I did. I enjoyed it mainly because I love talking to people who adore me.
Dad, what? I heard you had a Bob Hope comic.
I did.
Yeah.
I still do.
Yeah, that one had everybody, had me laughing pretty good. No, these guys, they become friends with Howard Bryant. He enjoyed their show and he makes appearances about once a month or so. And he got them a little feature on a couple of episodes of the Mystery Crate recently. So I heard of their show through the Mystery Crate and I started just talking with the guys because I liked what they were about.
Oh, look at that. Look at us. Look at the Mystery Crate.
Yeah.
Spreading the word.
Finding folks, spreading the word. So, it's hosted by Anthony Canton and Jake Christie. And Anthony wanted to meet Greg. Anthony really loves embracing getting old, even though he's only in his mid-30s. And he says there's no greater role model for embracing getting old than Greg Cody.
So. Slightly offended, but it's fine.
Yeah, he's very young to be embracing getting old, by the way. He really is.
So yeah, they had you on to talk about your old comic collection too.
And that was a joy for me because, first of all, I encourage all of you to go to the podcast of theirs and listen. But I hadn't looked at those comic books in decades, like probably since the 90s, at least.
Guess, when moss, I put them in. Moss flew out of it.
Well, luckily, I had them encased and entombed.
That's Greg Cody's go-to, like, if it's something's old, moss flew out of it.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, how much black mold did you inhale when you dusted those things off?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, a lot. I passed out for the sixth time. No, it was very interesting to me to recall what my comic book habits were in, like, from the mid-60s to probably the very early 70s, because it was not just war comics. Like, Sergeant Rock was big with me, and of course, Superman and Batman and all that, but also the weird ones, Zorro, Bob Hope.
Are we getting MC Universe leftovers right now?
We are.
No, these are all things that cover. This is just a quick recap. Now,
we're getting reruns.
Yes. Okay. What I do want to say is they found some things that are pretty good value. Like your baseball card collection, you have no idea what you're sitting on with your comics.
Correct.
You've got some that could, you know, fetch you a little bit of coin if you wanted to.
Yeah, there was one. They told me if it was in mint condition, it would be worth more than $2,000.
Yeah, that was an old Batman comic. That was
It was like the 200th issue of something, like some big anniversary issue or something.
Or that kind of thing.
But let's cut to the real thing. Anthony, like I said, he calls you his washed king because you are the king of the washed agenda, the embracing getting old.
Right.
He wrote you a poem.
Yeah, that was other than tearing up listening to Pebble Drive, it was probably the most honored I'd been recently for someone just being way too effusive in their praise.
Well, should we play it real quick?
You know what? Let's do, because it's about me.
Yes. This is to Greg Cody. Yes. To Greg Cody, our truly washed king, we salute you, or that kind of thing. From the moments that hit the nail on the head exactly to the hard network outs, stories, and zagaki. For there's more to you than the laugh's barrage. It has stood the test of time like your garage. And there is so much more to say, like how we appreciate back in my day, telling us how things used to be. Old storytelling, it fits the bill to a T. A Greg Cody Tuesday is never filler. No one does better than the show killer. What would be great is a fantasy update. We are the Lobos is the chant that's never late. More so than anything, Greg, you are the champ. And this show is grateful to be in your camp. Now, how will I end this? I'm not sure where to go. But just like the Greg Cody show, the answer is, you never know.
That was beautiful. Yeah, that was great.
Great work by Anthony. Great poem. Loved it. But I have to take umbrage with something, Greg.
Uh-oh, what? It was beautiful. I can tell you that I think that is the first time poetry has been directed at me. The first time I have been the subject of poetry.
Greg.
Down the wall at
1440s to the death. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah. First time, huh?
First. Okay.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeti, I consider spoken poetry and song two different things. Maybe it's, you know, I'm not saying I'm right, but I just do. You know, Robert Frost did not put his words to music, and so it was different. That was poetry, and this is that kind of thing. Yeah. But anyway, Anthony, I really appreciate that. If you're listening, thank you very much. And that kind of thing.
Did those guys buy ad time on this show? I mean, Jesus.
Look, when somebody has me on their podcast,
when someone
and I
praises
like them,
me, when someone loves them some Greg Cody,
that's right.
I love them in return.
I do. I love people
you don't,
who love
but
me.
Usually, like, Yeti, maybe my dad's growing. But like usually my dad would be like, let's limit how much we talk about this other podcast.
Oh, big time. Big time. I was I was watching too to see Willie actually retweet their show link.
Did he?
He did. Did he? Wow. And he did well. Yeah. He did. He did a good job. Thank you. You're growing a little bit.
I am.
Have you jumped the shark?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I will admit this. I had never heard of the phrase washed used in a positive sense. And I know a couple of years ago, LeBron James referred to himself as hashtag washed king. And that's when I think the phrase sort of took off. But when he first started reading that poem and referred to me as whatever he did, washed something.
The washed king. His washed
king. I didn't know how to take that. And obviously he meant it as a compliment. But, you know, if someone refers to somebody as washed, to me that means their career is pretty much.
I've done this on the show before. Like I don't understand why washed is a negative thing. Like when I'm washed, I feel delightful. I'm like, if I'm real sweaty and then I get out of the shower, I'm like, oh, I'm washed. Oh,
that's
I feel
true.
Great. I could do anything. And yet we're calling old athletes who don't have it anymore, old writers who don't have it anymore, washed.
Right.
Why are we? You'd think they would be dirty. You think it would be like, he's filthy. You're filthy.
That's, you know, taken literally, you're 100% right. But if somebody said to me, benched Matt Ryan, man, he is washed.
He's filthy. See, filthy's good. Filthy. Mm-hmm. If he's filthy, dirty. That cooked. Means like nasty.
Cooked is good. Sure. That more connotes. Yeah. Washed is a good thing. Let's all get washed,
cooked.
Folks.
It should be cooked. You're so right. He's cooked.
Yeah.
He is cooked. Okay.
You know, we haven't even announced our guest today.
Oh, my gosh. We are so thrilled to have Mina Kimes on from ESPN. She's terrific. She's been on with us, I'd say, a couple previous times, but not for a long time. And she's good. She's one of the great NFL analysts on the air, on anybody's air.
And there's much more substance in that interview than there has been in the first 20 minutes of this episode.
Isn't that the truth? Hi, Mina.
She's not here yet.
Oh. I thought that was a segue.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Mina.
Hi, guys.
What's up, Mina?
Thank you for joining us.
Your producer in the upside down? Oh, no, I see a little paneling. It looked like you were in like total blackness there.
Yeah. Sometimes he wears a black shirt and he just looks like a floating head.
Yeah. Mina, we're going to get right into it because we don't want to keep you too long. We have a lot to talk to you about. Everybody knows Mina Kimes from ESPN because she's the best football analyst on anyone's air in the entire world. What do you think about that?
I will accept the compliment.
No pressure.
That's right.
Doesn't Billy Gill routinely beat me in the Guardians annual?
Yeah, he's number six. Where were you on that list? He's usually number six. Oh. I think you're higher.
I did beat him, yeah. Awkward.
That's funny. Mina, it's been a bad spell for old quarterbacks. Matt Ryan gets benched, and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady together seem to be going through a real struggle right now. Whose fandom should be more concerned about their aging quarterback, Green Bay's or Tampa's?
I was going to say Dan Le Batard because of Aaron Rodgers. I don't know how he's holding up these days.
That's a fair comment.
I will say probably the Packers, though, in all honesty, just watching both of those offenses and their struggles. They're very different, and I would say the reasons for their struggles are different. But with the Bucks, you know, Brady doesn't seem to trust his protection, and sometimes for good reason. I do feel like I've talked about this. He's speeding his throws a bit, but he still does try to push the ball downfield, and he's still good for, you know, a few pretty spectacular throws a game. And he also does have very good skill players. So, you know, for me, that offense, it's kind of a matter of play calling, a little bit of comfort with the protection. And I think they can turn things around, where I'm a little bit more skeptical about Green Bay turning things around.
What's your favorite storyline in the NFL this season? Like, because you do, you know what you do NFL Live, you get a lot of stories, a lot of things you have to talk about. What are the things that are like actually like you're excited to talk about?
I'll go full homer here. Geno Smith is an incredible story.
He really is.
Somebody's got to write this story, because, you know, in some ways, it's like a Cinderella story, but in some ways it's a little bit sad, because watching him, you can't help but feel like this dude should have been given a significant chance years ago, and now he's over 30. And it's great that he's been given that opportunity. He had to win it, and he's ran with it and is playing the best football of his career. Right now, he is playing like one of the 10, I would even higher, best quarterbacks in the NFL. But, you know, thinking about all the years he languished on the bench, it's not like he's dramatically, you know, I mean, I do think he's playing better than he ever has, but it kind of makes you wonder what might have been.
Who are the three backups that are the most thinking, I could be Geno Smith right now?
Okay, that's a great question. I'll go Tyler Huntley in Baltimore. I feel like he is one where he's shown flashes of potential, and I guess he's the one who I think maybe could be Geno Smith at some point. So you got to go young. I mean, there's some. So okay, so not young actually, because you probably want to go older.
Right. I'm trying to think. I honestly just thought of this like when you were talking about him. Like, I wish I had like some quarterbacks to throw out there.
Mm. How about Bailey Zappi?
I think Bailey Zappi's getting the chance, although it sounds like Mac Jones is going to start this week. Bailey Zappi's like the anti-Geno Smith, like, you know, in that he was a later round draft pick and was given like an incredible opportunity and set up to succeed, I would say. And yeah, we'll see how that goes, man. It's pretty disastrous right now in New England.
Mina, you probably know Russell Wilson's game better than anybody, being a Seahawks fan, covering him. What is his problem right now? Particularly his completion percentage, 58.6, is appreciably lower than any time with Seattle.
Yeah. It would have been funny if you just said, what is his problem right now? I actually feel bad for Russ for some of the hate he's getting off the field, you know, separate from football criticism. Yeah. It feels like it's gotten a little intense.
It is weird.
But
yeah. I feel bad for the guy.
It feels like a lot of folks waited like years to unload and are now just like unloading on, you know, he's cringy. He's always been cringy though. So, but you're now we're talking about it because he's bad.
He also seems really nice too.
I've never heard that he's anything but a nice guy. So I'll just throw that out there. Yeah. You know, cringy for sure.
Right. Of course.
I'm like, damn it, only I'm allowed to make fun of him. Okay, the football side, though. So it's interesting, guys, because you actually saw some of this his last 2 years in Seattle, where he did struggle. And so, you know, he was injured. He hurt his thumb his last season with the Seahawks. But even before then, you saw a few things, which was when defenses started playing more of those two high shell looks against him with the safeties lingering back, he was unable to test the ball or throw the ball downfield, which is a huge part of his game. And seemed sort of unwilling to take what was given to him underneath, unwilling to throw over the middle of the field, which is something he's never been particularly fond of, and notably lacked the mobility to create and overcome those deficiencies. And I think that is a huge part of the reason why the Seahawks were willing to move on, is as they saw his mobility apparently declining, the scrambles going down, they felt like his game wouldn't, I'm speculating here, but his game wouldn't age well, because so much of it is predicated on mobility, being able to make plays outside of the pocket, to dodge sacks. So that part isn't surprising to me, that that's kind of continued in Denver. What is surprising, though, is you see him, I would say, missing routinely throws he used to make all the time, even the last 2 years, especially, I would say, shorter throws to the outside. And that makes me think, you know, maybe there's a combination of pushing and, you know, maybe he's just pressing and feels a need to show that he can still be explosive. But I also wonder if perhaps the injury is a shoulder injury that might be affecting him too.
Samina, I was thinking about this season and I can't necessarily tell which teams are great outside of like, you know, the Bills and the Chiefs for pretty good reason. But like looking at the scores, I don't necessarily know what teams are great. And so I was thinking, is this a low scoring season? And I found an article in the Washington Post from Andrew Greenberg that said that this is the lowest scoring season per team average since 2009. What's going into that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's a few things. A lot of it has to do with, frankly, defense reacting and adjusting to some of the offensive evolution of the last 5 to 10 years. An offense, I was just talking about the Vikings offense, which runs, it's the McVay offense, basically, with 11 personnel, the boot action, the outside zone run game, but it's just not that efficient this year. And part of it has to do with defenses kind of, what I was alluding to earlier, basically sitting back, playing a lot of zone, trying to limit what they can do over the top, not being fooled by bootlegs the way they were before. And it's kind of a thing you're seeing around the league where defenses are sort of willing to concede a shorter passing game. They're willing to concede the run, which is why rushing is actually up, very successful running teams like Philadelphia or even Atlanta are having success this season because defenses have trended lighter and they have decided to allocate more resources spatially in terms of the players they have to stopping the pass. Now, as far as what that means for scoring, I think it's just a product of like, okay, if offenses aren't able to move down the field as quickly with those explosive plays, you're going to have fewer opportunities to score. And I think that's what we're seeing is the limiting of the explosive passing game and how that's sort of leaning towards defenses winning more and more.
Mina, I want to veer from football for a second because in my household, we're going through a crisis of canine proportion. And I have the world's largest puppy. Jumpin' Charlie is 7 months old, and he's huge. We just sent him away to a month-long boot camp to whip him into shape because we have such behavioral problems with this dog. And I'm just curious, Lenny.
And they're not the best trainers. It needs to be said here. There's a pie chart here, Dad, and you and Mom don't lead the league in discipline. So they're just
that
like,
is correct.
Let me just pay someone $3,000 to do this for me.
to do my job for me because I'm a terrible dog parent. Mina, you're not a terrible dog parent. Lenny, as much as I know, shows no behavioral problems. He's a beautiful dog. Have you ever had a problem with Lenny of a scale that you got frustrated and almost considered sending him away to camp like me?
I never considered sending Lenny away to camp, but when we adopted him, he was about 3 and he was a really big time barker. Like you couldn't walk him without him stopping to bark at any human or dog in nearby vicinity. So I did actually hire a dog trainer for some private lessons to basically teach me how to teach him to stop barking.
They tried that. It failed.
Oh, he probably did about barking, 6 of them.
Barking is the least of our problems.
I'm saying
believe
you
me.
Did bring in a trainer.
What does he do?
He's just a jumper. Like when you show up to the house and he's big, like my wife and daughter are like terrified of him because he just like he's unbearable.
They he's would a have 55 to like 55 pound puppy.
They would have to like get him on the leash for us to walk in the house.
Have you tried any zapping devices or anything like that, a collar?
We've tried doping them up with magic pills.
Dad, it's four dogs. It's like CBD. You said that in such a terrible way.
Oh,
like,
that stuff. I've never had success. So we actually had a device that worked very well. And, it's very low key called the Bark Begone. Okay. And I believe it's just like a high pitched noise that only dogs can hear. But whenever it pointed at Lenny, he would just immediately stop what he was doing. Ooh. And it now is the point where if I just pick it up, he'll stop what he's doing because he's so trained.
No.
Wait, it's a lot cheaper than what my dad
Greg
did.
Has his own little zapper or low pitch sound that he would use to discipline or center Charlie. And here's what he would do. Greg, go for it.
Yeah,
he has this noise.
He was like, wow, my owner loves me. I know. What are you talking about? That's an encouraging noise.
It's supposed to be like an ominous sound.
Hey, I think you're saying hey, like hey, hey, but it turned for some reason it turned into bay.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, you sound like Yeah, baritone.
We're officially wasting Mina's time. Is Tyrod Taylor thinking he could be a starter right now?
You know, he's had some opportunities. Yeah. That, granted, most of them have been bad, and he was stabbed by a team doctor.
Yeah, that sucks.
Very unfortunate.
There's not that many Geno Smiths, is what I'm looking. I'm looking at these depth charts. There's not as many Geno Smiths as we thought.
You're not seeing any backups who, like, it has to be a backup who didn't really get a fair shot,
right?
You know, and Geno's unusual. Like, for their him and Tyrod are unusual in that until recently, you really haven't seen many black journeyman quarterbacks, veterans. It's usually the standard, you know, white dude, pocket passer.
Yeah.
And some of that has to do with, you know, I think if you're like saying a guy's been around the league, you're talking about 10 or whatever years back, black quarterbacks just kind of not being given the same opportunities, but also I think haven't been given the same opportunities to even stick around for that long to be considered a potential, you know, backup the way or starter the way Geno is.
Now, I'm going to steal it away from football again real quick because...
You're probably wearing a Mariner shirt, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah, okay. Oh, I see it. Yeah. There you go.
I just love this team so much. And this year was so great and so much fun to follow. And at the risk of this becoming the Yeti and Mina Mariners Hour, can you give a quick summary of the way this season made you feel and what you see for the future?
Do you care about the Mariners as much? Like, were you into this, Mina? Did you get into this?
Yeah, no, I definitely was. It was a pretty magical season. And I would say such a likable team. I think it was kind of cool watching America sort of discover how likable, you know, whether it was like Julio Rodriguez and the Home Run Derby or Cal Raleigh, the Big Dumper, America learning that a guy's nickname was the Big Dumper, you know, sending us to the play. I mean, it was just a very cool season. And it was also like kind of, I wouldn't say it's house money because, you know, I thought the Mariners had a shot going into this year, but I didn't think they were going to win a playoff series. So I was pretty happy with how things ended.
I think they're the scrappiest team in baseball. It led the league in one run wins the last two seasons in a row. And just like that chaos ball that they play, it's incredible. And I think it's really cool setting up for next season with Julio, and we got the All-Star game going there.
Yeah, definitely. They feel like a team that's going to be good for a while.
Mina, which of the two New York football teams are the most convincing to you? Like who's the real deal of the Jets and Giants?
Or the New Jersey teams?
They are the New Jersey teams.
Classic joke.
Well, and then, yeah, well, it's you actually a good distinction because there's three. Like right. Buffalo's in New York, so
yeah, you
know. That's fair. Yeah. We don't doubt Buffalo the way that many of us still doubt the Giants and Jets.
Yeah, so I actually have a little bit more confidence in the Giants. I think the Jets have a better defense. I love their defensive front in particular. Sauce Gardner has been everything you would have hoped for. The whole secondary has played really well, but I think the Giants, what they're doing is a little bit more sustainable, just because I think the offense is very well schemed. I think, you know, everyone's been praising Brian Daboll to no end, but I do believe the way he's optimized Daniel Jones is something that can continue to work over the course of the season. Whereas with the Jets, Zach Wilson hasn't played very well. I mean, this is a deep team that's led by its defense and, you know, was led by its run game, just lost two of its most important offensive players in Breece Hall and Elijah Vera Tucker. So I'd have to go with the Giants.
Who are your three favorite? Not your favorite, the three best units, because you mentioned the defensive line.
Yeah.
Three best units in the NFL.
The best units in the NFL just were best position groups.
Right. Like these corners, these receivers.
Okay. So the Eagles offensive line is the best line in football, and they're so dominant. And it like seemingly doesn't matter if a guy gets hurt, just another guy comes in. It's just like, oh my God, this is insane. So I'll start there. I think
Dolphins receiving core.
The Dolphins receiving core is definitely up there, I would say. Yeah, no, I think that's fair. No, I mean,
it's really just two, though. Like, if we're doing best.
Yeah, yeah, right. Like, the Bengals have a better 1-2-3 punch, I would probably say. Yeah. The Bills are certainly in the mix. Yeah. But the two are pretty fantastic. Pretty good. I guess you could count Gesicki. He's basically a receiver.
Yeah, even though they don't use him.
Yeah, well, I hope, because I said this to Dominique on my pod, I just don't want to see him to score any more touchdowns because I don't want to see him ever celebrate again.
Do you think a coach, like when you have a guy like Gesicki, does a coach like McDaniel need to find a way to use him? Or is it like just trade him away, let him be good for someone else and get a lot of picks? Like, what do you think? Like,
That's a great question. Yeah, I think it really comes down to like, okay, well, if we feel like our offense is efficient without using a tight end right now and it's not a huge need for us, it does make sense to trade him because he's a player I think where you could really get a decent return for sure. But you know, that's, I think, I don't know if McDaniel's closed the book on his ability to game plan for him just yet. It's still pretty, it's been a weird season and it's still pretty early. I'll go with, by the way, the Dallas defensive line for the last one, the edge rushers, all of them.
Mina, you mentioned Philadelphia, and only in Miami do fans give a shit, pardon my language, about whether a team finally loses a game after being unbeaten. So Dolphin fans, harking to the 72 perfect season.
Can they go undefeated?
No.
They're already thinking, is Philadelphia finally the team that's going to tie our unbeaten record?
It's too early for this question, Dad. Doesn't everyone assume they're going to give a game up, right? I mean, it's the NFL.
Look, okay, there's four games. They play the Giants twice.
Dad, she's looking at the schedule. They
play the Giants twice. They play Green Bay, which is not the Green Bay of typical strength, and they play at Dallas, which obviously is the one where
at
they might
Dallas
actually
is the
be
one.
In.
Yeah, that. But yeah, man, this it's a lot of W's on this schedule. Okay.
I know, right?
But I would say at Dallas is the one I'd be eyeballing for sure.
Yeah, that's the game of the century, if not the millennium.
One of the Giants.
Or is that
games
the same thing?
Go haywire.
All right, we want to get Mina out of here, but I want to do some rapid fire NFL Live Teammate Edition. Most likely to eat a snack during a commercial break.
Seen him do it a lot. I hate to be on brand, you know, or pick the obvious choice, but yeah, Marcus Spears.
Oh, Marcus Spears? Okay. Yeah. Most likely to be late to set.
Brian Clark. He's always at the last second shows up. So we're always like, oh, is he going to make it? Is he going to make it? He always makes it, though.
Most likely to pay for a group dinner.
Marcus.
Oh, okay. Wow. Least likely?
Me.
I appreciate the honesty.
Do you guys ever like play like the thing with the throw the credit
card
in, like,
roulette? Yeah. No. Do anyone outside of professionally athletes do that?
No, but hey, you know, the NFL IA team. I mean, come on. I mean, most likely to sing during a commercial break.
Dan, he actually does. It's awful.
What's he to go to? What's the go to?
Like, he will sing like Adele. Like, shit, he has no business singing.
Adele? It's,
like, he belts it, and I'm like, I'm trying to concentrate, and they'll be like, rolling in the... It's horrible.
Rolling in the... Who's the funniest in the group text?
Me.
Yeah, okay.
I'm always doing troll stuff in the group text.
Mina, as we let you go, I want to ask...
my dad has Dad, you get one more question, because you'll do this thing where you keep saying, as we let you go, for like extra like seven questions.
I know. It's true. I don't want to let Mina go, because she's so good. But you do so much. You podcast, you're a writer. You've even dabbled in Rams preseason analysis on the air. What facet of your job gives you the most joy? Like, what do you see yourself doing in 5 or 10 years?
Well, I really love my balance of work right now. It's kind of a politician. It's a very Russell Wilson-y answer, I guess. But I don't know. Everything I do kind of uses a different part of my brain. I like on my podcast, I can be a little less unbuttoned.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got it.
I can be a little less buttoned up, so a little more unbuttoned. I added an extra day with Dominique Foxworth, and it really is just like
so good.
Our conversations. Yeah, it's just, thank you. It's just two friends just shooting the shit. Whereas like with TV, I feel like I have to kind of synthesize my ideas and communicate clearly, which is something I enjoy. You know, I do miss writing, but I just haven't really had time for it lately. So yeah, maybe at some point down the road, but I don't know, man. I really like what I'm doing. I like the mix of work, and yeah, and I just still love football. So,
well, Mina, we love your work, and thank you again for making a little time for us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Go Fins.
On the way out, who's the NFL team you have the most figured out?
The Bills, because they're awesome.
Yeah, that's damn it. I should have gone with least figured out. Answer that too. Now I'm like Greg Cody.
Yeah,
the Vikings.
Yeah,
are a confusing team.
That's a good answer.
Good answer. Thank you, Mina, so much.
Good answer.
Oh, you want to see Lenny?
Yes.
He's not a perfectly behaved pup.
I see him when you pick him up for daycare or whatever you do with him. Like he's got some height to him when he needs when he wants.
There he
it.
Is. Yes.
Lenny.
Hey,
oh,
Lenny.
Wow, this is a get. I mean,
that's great.
We thought Mina was a get. This is a bay. He's doing bay, but this is a get right here.
It is
awesome.
I love
there
dogs.
There's so
they're
much
so
character in Lenny's face. I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, he's a real. He has the it factor. You know?
Yeah. You want to trade dogs? I'm just curious because I can give you a 55-pound
much younger one.
Puppy.
You're going a lot younger. That would be an epic trade. Mina would never could never make that trade. All right. See you, Mina.
He's like Geno Smith. You know, he's adopted, peaking in his prime. All right. Bye, guys.
See ya.
working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. Wow, this is exciting. It's trick or treat. I tell you, the Lobos know how
It's Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, trick or treat, Halloween. The Lobos know how to do this holiday. Every year, we invite the Lobos to go trick or treating with us. We had a small turnout this year.
I know, that's why I'm here, because it was such a sad... it was just you and one other... Who is this guy here with us?
Trevor's here with us, Trevor Lawrence. A good dude. I mean, a good dude. You know, he's my third-string quarterback. He's trying... But here's the thing. He just played in London. Like, how did he get here in time for Halloween?
So wait, you invited all the Lobos over for Halloween? Like,
yes.
And only Trevor Lawrence showed up.
We wanted all the Lobos to trick-or-treat with us, and only Trevor Lawrence showed up. Is that going to earn him some brownie points? Oh, you know it.
Maybe he's the only one without kids?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he showed up. Trevor, we love you. Seriously, you
trick or treat him, all right?
Yeah, you are right. We got to get a haircut, though. Come on. I mean, what are you, in 1975? I mean, what year are you? I mean, but seriously, you're a good young quarterback. We love having you as our third teamer. And
where's everybody at?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, LJX, you know, he's my starter. He's, you know, he's blown up largely because of his affiliation with Greg Lobos.
Hey,
Frankie, how you doing?
How's it going? Hey, good to see you.
Well, another trick or treater there. Frankie.
Is it embarrassing when you run into your neighbors and you're trick or treating with NFL players?
Yeah, it really is. You know, I'm surprised Frankie didn't notice Trevor Lawrence.
I don't think Frankie is a big football fan.
You know, he probably isn't. You know, Trevor's going up to his first house, his first door.
A trick or treat!
This is great.
Trick or treat!
I'm so proud of Trevor for showing up, going trick or treating with me. I wonder what he's getting. Ooh, whoa. Is that an Almond Joy?
Full size Snickers.
Whoa, full size. Wow. This is great. We're having fun here. It's Halloween Lobo style. We're doing it.
Low your boat.
Trevor, let me know if you get a Mr. Good Bar. I want it. Give me that good bar. Yeah, that kind of thing.
So we've been forced to stand outside for this ending of this podcast because our family is loud and my brother is in there. It's a Sunday night.
Right.
And we're outside right now, so it might be a little windy. But I just we couldn't get quiet in that house, so we needed to come outside. The way we do this podcast is during football season, at least the way this works is we record a bulk of the podcast on Friday evenings, and then we do a football recap on Sunday nights.
Right.
And on Friday, you started the podcast in passing, mentioning that Jerry Lee Lewis had died, and then we went on to live our lives. We did the rest of the podcast. And then that night, you know, Greg Cody decided to try to cancel himself. You ended up tweeting about Jerry Lee Lewis, then doubling down and defending your tweet. Yeah. And then you deleted it. Do you want to make a statement to the people on the whole Jerry Lee Lewis drama?
Okay, first of all, I never delete tweets. I don't believe in that. I did it this time because...
I guess you do believe in it a little bit.
Well, the reaction was so bizarre. I mean, look, I screwed up. Okay, I drunk tweeted on a Friday night.
Dreeted.
I'm going to be honest. I drunk tweeted. I don't want to get into, you know, I love Jerry Lee Lewis's music. You know, I know he wasn't a perfect man. I tweeted something I shouldn't have that didn't give enough credence to the idea that, you know, even though...
I believe you acknowledged it and then you hit him with one of the great stills in Twitter history. You know, you did this stuff, still your music was great.
Yeah.
The need, I don't understand the need to like want to praise him and defend him. Right, is really like it can be both things. You liked his music, not a good guy.
Right.
Like, I think those things need to be equally said, and I think you were skewed more towards his music.
That's fine. You know, we've had this larger conversation. We had it with Woody Allen.
It's all over the place. Michael Jackson. Like, there are so many good artists that, you know, Rob Lowe. Like, we have a lot of artists.
Okay, right. And how do you separate the artist from the art? And that's in this case,
I think
basically I screwed up with what I tweeted. And I apologized. And I apologized as directly and as sincerely as I possibly could. But you know what I've found?
We just got to cut old white men some slack. You know, this world's changed a lot on you.
Come on.
I'm half kidding. I mean,
but here's the thing. What I learned after what I tweeted is that, you know, the cancel war,
it is kind of annoying that there's a lot of people in your mentions that probably don't even give a shit about Jerry Lee Lewis, but they just like to find something that they can get mad at. Like, right. So that part, I'm with you. Looking at the replies, it did seem a bit extreme. Most people, I think, you know that your intentions are good.
Right.
You're not pro pedophilia.
Right.
You know, you were just trying to say there was a time when this guy's music was important to you. But it's still one of the great. I know you deleted it so people can't see.
Yeah.
But there are screenshots out there of it. Like, it's one of the great stills in Twitter history.
Okay.
Should we move on and talk Dolphins?
I just think people are trying to outrage themselves.
Right.
You know, I mean, I said something that struck a bad note with people, and I was like, oh, I want to be more outraged than the next person.
Yeah.
You know what? I live by what I said. I apologize for it. If you can't live with that, if you want to cancel me.
That kind of thing?
That kind of thing. I mean, you know, go for it.
All right. Well, the Dolphins and Lions played one of the most exciting games in football history.
It really was.
I think people are a little too, like, I almost want to say pump the brakes. I think Tua has reached the point where we can back off on, everyone knows he's a bona fide starter in this league.
Right.
Whether he's top 10, top 15, top 20, we can debate. But he's a good quarterback when he's healthy and got his guys with him. So the conversation extends. People are praising him after this Lions game. And to me, the highlight is as much how bad the Lions defense is as it is praise of the Dolphins. But this McDaniels offense with Tua seems like it haven't lost yet with Tua healthy.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think the lead to my column, which you can read at MiamiHerald.com, was Tua, period. Let's start there, because I think when Tua does what he does, I don't care if it's against a bad opponent. He led a comeback win on the road. He not only outscored the Detroit Lions, he outscored his own sloppy defense in the first half. He outscored all his team's penalties, and he still
the penalties. Good God, were there penalties
in that game?
It was terrible. And that's another thing I wrote, was that there's a lot to correct there. You know, the special teams have been terrible for Miami. The penalties are a big, big issue. And if they want to be right now, they're a borderline playoff team. If they want to be a team that gets to the playoffs and actually maybe wins a game and you know, has people excited, there's a lot to correct here.
I think if Tua is healthy the rest of the year, they're not a borderline playoff team. I think with the soft schedule they have coming up, if Tua is healthy, I think this is a playoff team that clinches in week 15 or something. Like,
yeah.
I think this is, with Tua healthy, an above average AFC team. I don't think they're going to catch the Bills, so it's going to have to be a wild card. But yeah, I mean, I feel really good. The defense is weird. It plays like shit on the road, plays good at home.
Yes, right.
It's been weird. But, you know, I just think, like you said, we've seen a lot of good things, and there's room for improvement in a lot of areas.
Right, for sure. Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, there aren't many defenses that can cover both of them. Maybe one, not both. And so
I'm so over the Twitter finger people who are like, Tua's got to throw the ball earlier to Tyreek. It's like, thanks.
Yeah.
Like, you don't think he's trying to, like, I love how, like, people think, like, hey, he should try throwing the ball sooner to Tyreek. It's like, hey, thanks, guy on Twitter.
Right.
Like, I'm sure he hasn't thought of that.
They're going to work that out. Keep in mind, Tyreek's been here half a season. You know, they're going to work that out.
He's almost impossible to not, you can't overthrow him.
Right. You can't. No, you could, as soon as the ball is snapped, you could throw it as far as you possibly can, and he would get under it and catch it. I mean, it's crazy. But that's a beauty. And Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, and Waddle did the Waddle dance twice during the game. They're the two best receivers since Duper and Clayton in the 80s.
Wow, he said.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's no question.
Are they better?
They might be better. They might be better.
Yeah.
They might be.
That kind of thing.
That kind of thing.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Yeah. All right, let's do it.
Jack.
That kind of thing, Jack.
Jack.
Hey, let's go. That kind of thing.
Did you carve pumpkins this year?
I did. I carved all three. Oh, my gosh. They're wonderful pumpkins. I'm going to put out a...
You always say they're wonderful. They're just pumpkins.
Nah, they're great. I do three pumpkins. I do my classic Home Alone face. I do the classic funny, lovable pumpkin face, and I do the scary face. The scary pumpkin face. Oh, baby. I got all three going this year.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to all of you. Woo!